Oh, grandfather, tell me how it was when you were young. Was the world so very old when your life had just begun?
Oh, grandfather, tell me. Good afternoon and welcome to Living Permaculture on KDNK. I'm Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. I'm about to introduce two guests today, but first let me explain why. What myself and these two guests have in common is a program called Harvesting Our Potential, which was created by the Women, Food, and Ag Network, or WFAN. The Women, Food, and Ag Network is a community for food growers and land stewards who have been historically excluded from access to education, infrastructure, and support networks in agriculture. WFAN's mission is to engage women and non-binary people in building an ecological and just food and agricultural system through individual and community power. WFAN members are farmers, urban gardeners, environmental educators, researchers, community activists, and advocates for a just food and farm future. WFAN's vision is a vibrant, community-centered food and agricultural system in which women and other gender-marginalized people are strong leaders. WFAN has a multitude of programs, including Harvesting Our Potential, which empowers and uplifts farmers and food system leaders through knowledge sharing, mentorship, and community building in the field of sustainable agriculture to strengthen a future generation of growers. The Harvesting Our Potential program pairs aspiring and beginning farmers with experienced farmers for a season of mentorship. Participants are matched with mentors who are involved in the type of farming they're interested in to gain hands-on experience and guidance for about 8 to 10 weeks, and stipends are given to both parties. This year, I participated in the HOP, or Harvesting Our Potential program, as a mentor, and my mentee, Amber, aka Stormy Kennedy, is my first guest. As our listeners know, I operate an edible landscape nursery and consulting business called Colorado Edible Forest. Last year, a tour of Colorado Mountain College students came to visit my nursery, and an inquisitive student who asked lots of good questions followed up with me afterwards to ask if she could volunteer with me. Last fall, we began working together exploring and documenting local heritage fruit trees, which carried over into this past spring where she began helping me with fruit tree pruning. Between those time periods, another past radio guest of mine, Rita Mary Hennigan, informed me about the Harvesting Our Potential program and identified it as a way to bolster mine and Stormy's informal mentorship. Rita put me in touch with my second guest, Julianne, aka Jules Salinas, WFAN's executive director, to begin our mentorship applications. So there's my long preamble to introduce my two guests today. Stormy and Jules, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vanessa. I love all the connections that we have there. That's awesome.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here.
And just so our listeners are aware, Stormy is here with me in the studio, and Jules is dialing in by phone. Yeah. Well, Stormy, since I just alluded to our mentorship, let's begin with you. Can you tell us what sparked your interest in growing your own food and connecting with plants?
Well, first and foremost, it was just having that ability to provide for myself. And getting back to our, heritage roots, there's been a disconnect in the past, 20 years, ever since.
You've been alive?
Yeah, I guess ever since I've been alive. To our food systems, just knowing where they came from, where this apple came from. And I feel it's really special to know that. And that's really where it started, just, getting that connection back.
And I believe there's a popular song that encapsulates this idea for you, isn't there?
There is. Ironically, it's by the Presidents of the United States. I don't know if you guys know it. It's called Peaches. And this is where I'm supposed to sing it.
Millions of peaches, peaches for me.
Exactly.
Millions of peaches. Peaches for free. I know it.
Peaches come from a can. They were put there by a man from a factory downtown. Yeah.
And you want to change that song.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason that we should ever believe that our food comes from a can. Like, We gotta know.
Right.
Yeah, especially from a man that packed it. And that I've actually seen, it's sad, but I have seen in this valley, there are people who just don't recognize, they don't recognize that our food comes from the land, and they don't understand how nourishing it is to our mind and our body to harvest that and to fill ourselves with it. When we fill ourselves with artificial foods, it's not the same as the nutrients that the land gives us. And I just feel like it's so important for us to take hold of this ability that we have.
I love it. And you're currently studying at Colorado Mountain College. What are you studying and why?
I study ecosystem sciences and stewardship, which the stewardship part was why I enrolled in that program. Coming from a sustainability background, I kind of thought sustainability was like the foundation. It was, you know, it gave you all the information that you needed. And then something just clicked one day. I was like, no, we actually need to be working on the land. And that's the huge part about it for me. And the ecosystem sciences is just the bonus, just learning about how we're connected to all of these living things on the land. And it's ultimately teaching us how to, or teaching me how to tend it in a way that works with them.
Awesome. Yeah, so you're acknowledging that humans are actually a very important part of environmentalism.
Yes, we definitely are.
Yay. Well, Jules, I'll introduce your background next. Jules Salinas of Albuquerque, New Mexico, was appointed executive director of the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network in 2021. Julianne brings over 20 years of experience in nonprofit leadership in intersecting agriculture, climate change, and gender justice. Jules holds a BA in political science and an MBA with specialization in environmental management. Jules previously served as the associate director and interim executive director for Enlace Comunitario, an Albuquerque organization with a mission to reduce domestic violence in the Latinx immigrant community. Earlier, Jules served as assistant director of Greater Westtown Community Development Project in Chicago, Illinois, leading the successful development of an on-site community garden providing service learning to local high school students. At home, Jules operates a women's beekeeping education and hive wellness group. Jules, is there anything you'd like to add about your background?
That's a good one. The only other thing I would say that's kind of totally environmental related, is I also co-founded the Midwest Green Burial Society. It's October, so it seems appropriate to mention the Green Burial Society work.
Awesome.
And I actually am currently in Chicago. I'm dialing in from Chicago right now, and had the opportunity to visit a conservation burial ground that we were first in contact with back in 2007-08, and just 2 years ago they finally opened up, and it was beautiful, and it has this beautiful view of the Mississippi River, and anyway, it's beautiful, and that work is really important to me as well, so it's something that I know is really prevalent as well in Colorado.
Cool.
As well as New Mexico, so.
And to take a step back, would you tell us about the origin of the Women, Food, and Ag Network and the founding mother, Denise O'Brien?
Yeah, so in 1995, Denise O'Brien and Kathy Lawrence went to the United Nations to talk about women farmers, and that was the sort of the nascent beginnings of WFAN. We were just the beginning ideas. And Denise went and spoke and said, here are the challenges that we're facing as women farmers. Denise is an organic farmer. She's still an organic farmer in Iowa. Kathy was a food sovereignty advocate out of New York State. I believe she still is a food sovereignty advocate out of New York State. And they went and they spoke, and they were supposedly heard.
But there was a lot of momentum at that time to really recognize that women didn't really have a voice in agriculture. We weren't even recognized on the USDA census, and we weren't even counted on the USDA census unless we had a non-male partner. If we had a male partner, we were still not counted up until the most recent USDA census.
Wow.
Because if we had a male partner, well, obviously, he's the farmer. Obviously. And then if there were two women, then it was, well, one of them's got to be the farmer, because you can't have two women farmers that are actually women farmers. So we had a very significant undercounting of women farmers in America because of the lack of recognition that there actually were women farmers in America, and ranchers and agroforesters. And so Denise started that, Denise Swift and Kathy, and then about 4 years later, it turned the idea of these little groups that were getting together and having conversations. So then, why don't we do something more with this? And it got support of the Tides Foundation. The Tides Foundation served as our fiscal sponsor for many years. And then in 2011, I believe, we finally got our 501c3, and off to the races we were. And so last year, we hired our fourth full-time staff member, Lauren, who's our program, or this year, actually. We hired Lauren, and she's our program manager. So we have four full-time staff and two part-time staff.
Great. Well,
we're a small but mighty crew.
Yeah, I'll say. So I feel like I saw on the WFAN website that half of farmers in the U.S. currently are women. And was that based on the last census? Or
half of the landowners.
Landowners, okay.
The landowners or co-owners are women. Mm-hmm. And that is expected to grow. And in the next 20 years, over 400 million acres of farmland are expected to transition. And how that happens and to whom it transitions is going to be critical into the how we eat, what right. we eat, you know, what our crops look like. You know, like Stormy was saying, there is such a disconnection between the land and understanding of our health and the way that we live and just everything about it, right? So this is an ongoing conversation. Like, I just got back this week from Iowa, and I went across the entire state of Iowa, and I was out in Western Iowa at a listening session, White House listening session in Western Iowa, and just row crop of corn and soybean, and you know, here is the breadbasket of America. Mm-hmm. And it's like the shoemaker's children have no shoes. The breadbasket of America is not producing food for humans. You know, we're growing it for gasoline, we're growing it for cows not even in our country. We're growing it for cows in Saudi Arabia and Russia and other places. It's just absurd, like what is happening to our food. And we're growing it with pesticides and herbicides and toxic chemicals. The extent of toxicity that is going on in Iowa, it has become such a ecological, environmental, like, sacrifice zone. It's shocking and it's heartbreaking. The cancer rates in Iowa are statistically off the charts. Wasso learned, you know, the connection between agriculture and climate change. Iowa is second only to Florida for inability to be able to get insurance for your land and your house.
Oh my
because
gosh.
Of all the derechos and all of the climate change that has occurred, the derechos, the flooding, the droughts. And so isn't that tricky? Isn't that special that mm-hmm. you are perhaps a young farmer that wants to go and buy land, but you can't get insurance, and you can't get a mortgage if you can't get insurance. So, oh, I'm sorry, you can't get land, and you can't become a farmer. So we're going to sell it to this big corporation instead.
Oh.
Thanks for playing the game. Mm. You know, so these are interesting. You know, it's definitely a curse, I feel like, more than a blessing. We are living through interesting times. So I think I 100% agree with Stormy. We need to get back to recognizing where our food comes from, recognizing and creating connections to it, educating our communities and about food, the connection to food and building more food sovereignty. Yeah, but it's going to take a lot of work.
How do we
get up for it?
How do we get people addicted to harvesting berries and apples instead of fast food burgers and taquitos? How do we make them want to do that action with their hands? Like, it involves, you know, just like using our hands. And how do we get back to that? How do we show them it's fun?
You know, I think the irony is, I think TikTok is doing that for us in a lot of ways, right? It's romanticizing it in a way that we haven't been able to do, you know, through television and through, you know, other kinds of media. Mm. TikTok is showing people, hey, like, there are real farms around you. And there are people that live on these farms and want to do this kind of work. And here's also what this toxic type of farming is doing to you. Yeah. And explaining it in really short, digestible, no pun intended, sound bites that people can go, oh, hey, I didn't know that. And again, I don't think it's that people should get all of their news or information from TikTok, but I think recognize TikTok like is like a Wikipedia, right?
It's a resource.
It's not the answer, but it's the opening to the rabbit hole, yeah. Right? You can choose to go down the rabbit hole then and really find other information that is peer-reviewed studies, that are reliable sources, that are, you know, has been studied, and it's there. It's all there. Just a matter of whether you go for it, yeah, and find it.
I'll bring up a couple of quotes and then have each of you reflect. So the first one is, Jules, from one of your online bios. And it says, you believe our society is at a critical tipping point, globally and locally, and that a collective feminist approach to rebuilding society predicated on an inclusive, reimagined economy is the only sustainable way forward. And the other quote is from the founder of WFAN, Denise O'Brien. She says, my life has been devoted to raising women's voices in agriculture. My dream is that the landscape of industrialized agriculture will change as women become the decision makers on their land. What do each of you see as the power or potential or opportunity in amplifying a feminine approach to land management?
It's interesting because I just spent part of that trip in Iowa was spent with Denise. I was driving out to Western Iowa and I was just, it crossed my mind. I'm like, I wonder where Atlantic is. Because Denise is from Atlantic. She farms out of Atlantic. And I look up and this is Atlantic, 9 miles away. Like, guess. Okay. Sometimes the universe is really obnoxious. And so, long story short, I ended up writing her and saying, hey, I'm just outside of Atlantic at this listening session. She said, you got to come stay with me. So I went and stayed with her for a night and saw her. She's got a straw barrel house that she's building on her land. She's got she only farms 13 acres. She's got sheep. She's got turkeys. She's showing me all the other fruit trees and things that she's got on her land. And we've had a lot of conversations about what does it mean and actually about that in particular. And I don't know that we have the sociological data to prove this. And I'm sure there's some people that would say, well, that's not, you know, you can't prove that empirically, but I think my gut says, and her gut says, that women just have a different view and connection to land and place and nature. And if we were to live in relationship in a reciprocity with land and place and nature as we like to believe that we did, we would be in a very different place and that we could be in a very different place. And maybe that's romanticizing a place that never existed or a time that never existed, but it still doesn't, it still is a vision for a place that could exist. I don't know if you've ever read Braiding Sweetgrass.
Oh my gosh, that's what I was just thinking of when you said that.
I love that
book so much.
Isn't that book amazing? It's amazing, so amazing book. Yeah.
Yeah.
I that book is my, what are the people to enter my Roman Empire? I think about that book probably every day, at least once a day. And it's just from every part of that book, like, right. But particularly the reciprocity part. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't call it feminist thinking, right? But it's definitely that connection to land.
I also think that we have more of a need or a desire to nurture. And it's that like nurturing that is really fulfilling for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I feel like my feminine energy is that need to nurture. It's that need to grow and connect and to support and to live in reciprocity and not to conquer and always getting going for more and constant growth. It's about community. It's about bringing together. It's about gathering. It's about nurturing and supporting. And that's, to me, the difference between sort of feminine and masculine energy. And it's not to say that there's a difference, that there's not a need at times for masculine energy. There is. There needs to be balance. But I think that the overabundance of masculine energy in our, and patriarchy in our systems has been to our detriment as a society.
Well, we hope to encourage as many new farmers, especially women and non-binary folks, to get into the very fulfilling career of agriculture and growing food and building soil and nurturing nature.
Nurture nature.
Well, it's been such a lovely time reflecting with both of you, and we're approaching the end of our time, but before we close, I'll tell our listeners how they can get in touch with WFAN and our guests today. But Jules, I wanted to give you an opportunity to share any announcements or opportunities at WFAN.
Yeah, so we are going to be actually at the Regenerate Conference in Denver, Colorado on November 6th, 7th, and 8th. And you can find it, I believe it's at, if you just Google Regenerate Conference, it's part of Kivira, is the sponsoring agency. And we're going to be presenting on women in agriculture along with American Farmland Trust. And so we hope that you will come on out.
Stormy, do you have any closing thoughts or reflections?
Well, I was just thinking about how we didn't talk about the fun that we had this past summer.
That's right.
I think you should. Yeah. And I think you should, and you should pick out some of my stuff and just put some of that in.
No, we can have a balance, I think.
Tell us all the fun things we did.
Well, I think the most fun I had was climbing on that, like, 100-year-old apple tree. There's something about climbing in an old apple tree. For a person of my size, I'm like a full-size adult here. And I was all the way up at the top of that tree. It was just amazing. And the most beautiful location, just nurturing that tree. And I mean, I guess it's been taking care of itself for 100 years with human help, human hands. But I don't know. There was something really special about that. And I'm excited to go back to the Pittmans. And the grafting of the trees was also very cool.
And Stormy's going to plant one of the apple trees that she grafted at her new home.
I have an endangered apple.
What makes an endangered apple?
I guess there's none other like it. There are not very many of them, at least.
Yeah, they rediscovered the cultivar, but there's very few known to be living. It's called the Purple Mountain Majesty.
Yeah.
Oh, what a great name.
I'm sure it's going to be that beautiful, too. Like, the photos show it just so deep red. Yeah, but it's from the Montezuma Orchard.
Restoration Project.
Montezuma Restoration Project. And they, I guess, collected scion wood from the tree and that was originally seeded in the 1930s. So it's like a really old cultivar.
Yeah, and then they had a bunch of their trees planted at the Rogers Mesa Organic Research Station in Hotchkiss, and they were so kind to let us, in the spring, Stormy and I, go and take scionwood cuttings from the apple trees growing there, which is how we got our hands on all those cool apple endangered apple varieties.
Which was also a very fun day, too. That was right. Cool. Nice.
And Stormy and I are definitely going to continue working together. Will the Harvesting Our Potential program be offered again in Colorado and New Mexico and in the Midwest next year?
They will be offered in the Midwest. We are still waiting on funding for Colorado and New Mexico. So as soon as we can get that funding, we will open up those programs.
Well, speaking
of hint, nudge, nudge.
Right. So if any of our listeners go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, so if any of your listeners are philanthropists.
That's right.
And want to know a really great 501c3 and want to get specifically like to a program and, you know, say like, yeah, we want to do this. This is a great program. And we could pretty much hit the ground running as soon as we get the funding for it. So.
Yeah, on the donation page there, you can actually choose to specifically fund a mentee's stipend for the year.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if any of our listeners are interested in learning more about the Women, Food, and Ag Network, they can visit WFAN.org. There are links to subscribe to their newsletter, join their email listserv, links to their Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube accounts, and they can make a tax-deductible donation to support WFAN's work and programs like Harvesting Our Potential.
Yay, thank you.
And if anybody is interested in connecting directly with Jules, Jules can be reached at julianne@wfan.org. That's julianne@wfan.org. And if anybody's interested in getting in touch with myself or Stormy, they can email Vanessa@coloradoedibleforest.com, and I'll be sure Stormy gets the message. So, Jules and Stormy, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy school and work schedules to join us today.
Thank you, Jules. And thank you
so
Vanessa.
Much for having us. So great to talk to you both.
Yes, you too.
That was awesome. Well, thank you to our listeners for joining us today. I'm your host, Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Tune in next month on KDNK on the third Monday of the month at 4 p.m. for another episode of Living Permaculture. I'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Before all the streets are paved.